I think to understand God, I have to do a lot of shifting in my understanding about the world. What I naturally think is that things are going good, or I am being loved if it feels good. I don't think that's how God works at all. Not at all. I think that one of the evidences of His goodness, of His mercy, of His compassion, of His loving kindness, is that He's willing and He's able, and He often brings us through things that feel intolerable and very painful to us.
Welcome to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center. Our hosts are Dr. Jack Crabtree and Christine Barber. Jack is a philosopher by training, but his real passion is the Bible, having studied and taught it for more than 25 years. He is currently on staff at Mackenzie Study Center and Gutenberg College in Eugene, Oregon. Christine is a licensed marriage and family therapist, having practiced in California and Oregon for over 20 years. She is employed by the Caris Foundation, a teaching and counseling ministry. In this series, titled Being a Christian, Jack and Christine discuss the most important biblical concepts of the Christian life. Now, here are Jack and Christine.
Hey, listeners, beware. If you write a letter to us, you may well hear it on the radio, because that's what's been happening the last, I don't know, Jack, how many programs?
Three, I think we've done already.
Yeah, on this one letter. Mm-hmm. This person just asked, as we've said before, some really intriguing questions, great questions. And this is perhaps our last one, but I'm not going to promise it on this particular letter. Jack, I think you've done a really great job answering his questions, but this time he's got a question pretty much directed at me, so I'm going to start, and I'll just read part of that letter. He says, Christine Barber seems to believe that God is so near, guiding her as it were. You know, I kind of bristle right there when I start reading that part of his letter, because I don't know if he means this, but a lot of Christians talk about their faith as being something that's kind of warm and fuzzy, where they have a daddy that takes care of them, or like a husband. They think about climbing up into God's lap and having God just kind of nurture them in a really cuddly way. Or God is near in the sense that they really hear His voice, or they experience something really present and near very often, and they kind of count on their faith being authenticated by those kind of warm, fuzzy experiences. And I don't know if he meant that, but that's certainly not my experience with my faith.
That's not the Christine Barber I recognize.
No way. You don't?
No.
Okay, so who do you recognize?
Well, there are a number of people in our culture for whom that is the normative, that kind of nearness, that kind of direct guidance from God. And I never hear you speaking in those terms or thinking in those terms about your faith. That's what I mean.
So. Yeah. No, I don't. And yet, at this point in my life, I'm 46, I've been a believer since I was 16, I do experience God in a very different way than I did very early on. In a sense, He is very near, but not in the warm, fuzzy, I get to hear His voice, climb up on His lap, He's my daddy kind of way. It's a much more coming up from the kind of depth of my guts and from a whole lot of life having been lived, questioning, thinking, with a lot of hard reality, is God real? And my answer has come over a lot of time, yeah. I really firmly believe that God is real, and I stand on that. And in that sense, God is very near to me.
So maybe explore that just a little bit more. Very near to you. What exactly do you mean by near when you say that, then? He's very real to you. Why own the word near? But in what sense?
I would love to go on and read more of his question, because I think
okay.
The answer will come out of his question, okay. Which I think is, it would be really helpful in answering that. Isn't it true, he goes on to say, that the best we can say for God is that he is far away and fundamentally disinterested? There are a lot of ways to look at our century, but any way you look at it, we find little evidence of an interested, compassionate God. I saw Sunshine last evening, another Jewish anti-communist Holocaust movie, this one Hungarian, like East West, which is French, and in all of them, the grandfather of them all, the novel, Darkness at Noon, Christine and Jack. If God has made you happy dwellers of the Pacific Northwest, then what is God doing to all the unhappy people who are living somewhere else? Am I the only unhappy person there is? And what about all the people that I know and read about in the paper? God is not here or even close to here. This is just common sense. Okay, so I really have a lot of thoughts about that, so I'm just going to plunge in. Is that all right, Jack?
Yeah, we should just tell the listeners we're not done with the question yet, but you already have a boatload, so you're going to pause and answer that?
Yeah, I kind of have to unload the cargo on this boat.
Okay.
I think I would say that God is far away and fundamentally disinterested if I had a different perspective of life than I do now. I see God's interest in me, not being through the pleasantries of my life, but often being through the suffering that I'm exposed to. This writer sees me and sees us as being happy dwellers of the Northwest. It kind of sounds like we have Leave It to Beaver lives, and I guess on the outside to some people I could really look that way. But if you look at my internal life, the life that I live in my office with the people that I work with, that I counsel, if you look at the nitty-gritty of my struggles in my marriage, if you look at how much I struggle with being a mother, if you look at so many profoundly difficult things in my life that don't have answers, that haven't come to conclusions that I like, that probably never will, I think you would think very differently. No, I wasn't involved in the Holocaust, but very often in my life, daily in my life as a counselor, I'm encountered with the Holocaust of some people's lives. I think I've alluded to this a number of times on this show, but for me to really be a helper to the people, many people that I work with, I can't stand apart from them. I have to enter into, or at least as close to possible, enter into the agony that they're with, that they have inside of them. To not do that is to not help them at all. It's a daily choice to be in a Holocaust movie for me in many ways. Yesterday when I was meeting with someone, in fact, their spouse came in for the first time. And at the end of the session, the spouse said, "Oh my heavens, you just gave my wife chemotherapy. It will heal her ultimately. I can see that. I see the good of it. But it's killing her in the process." I thought that was a profoundly good understanding of exactly what I was doing. And I wasn't doing it because I was standing apart from her. I was standing inside life with her so that she could have a light shine inside her soul that's so dark where she can't see. And very often, the way that we end up seeing is through other people having the willingness to hear what we're really saying and to let us hear what we're saying, what we feel, what we believe, what is there. So, is my life an easy one? I would say absolutely not. Daily, I have to ask myself the question, why? Daily, I do ask myself the question, am I willing to enter into this kind of pain with people? Do I have the energy to do it? Do I have the courage to do it? What it does for me is it not only wipes me out physically, but it always brings up the question, is God good? It always pushes on that. I always have to be asking over and over again, is God good? Not based on the beautiful flowers in my garden, though that's a wonderful example of God's goodness, but based on the hell of people's lives. Why would God put people through this? And my answer is, ultimately, because he is a just, loving, and I think above all, knowing God. He knows, and I don't. He understands, and I don't. But what I have seen, Jack, over the years, is that suffering, apart from most anything in the world, is what brings people to an understanding of themselves, of God, of life, in a way that nothing else can. And I have come to value it. I don't like it. It hurts. I don't welcome it. But I think that it is of the highest importance to have the courage to enter into it. And then to have to ask the question, is God good? Is God interested? And I would say from my experience, absolutely, God is good and God is interested. And he shows us thus by the suffering that he allows us to go through. It is his mercy. And that's how God is near today. I didn't know that before. I think I pushed him far away when things hurt. Now when things hurt, I see his loving kindness in a very difficult way.
You say very difficult way?
Very difficult.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think I've come to realize over the course of my life is, with respect to this question that he's asking, is how subjective pain is. If we try to objectify pain and suffering, we don't really get it, because by its very nature, it's subjective. I know that as a matter of fact, if you looked at my life objectively, some of the most painful things in my life have been trivial. I mean, if I could get distance from it, I'd realize, Jack, get a grip. I mean, it's not that big a deal. It doesn't have to hurt that much. But the fact of the matter is, it did. You know, whether it had to or not is immaterial, is beside the point. It's the way God had entered into my life and was creating a deprivation that hurt me like everything, that hurt me like nothing else had hurt me before. I've had times in my life where the pain was so great I thought I was going crazy. I thought I was never going to recover. Well, the issue that I won't get into, but the issue was really relatively trivial compared to things that other people throughout human history have experienced. But did anyone who has experienced a greater loss than mine feel it any more intensely or any more deeply? I don't see how. So to raise the question, we have to ask, what is the real question? Do we wonder about the goodness of God because of the pain he causes? Or do we wonder about the goodness of God because of some kind of objective harm that he does? And if we're going to measure objective harms and see of us who has been harmed more objectively, that's one thing. But if we're going to look at the pain in our life, I think we'll find that we're all pretty equal in that regard. We have all suffered. We've all experienced torture of one kind or another.
Yeah, I want to add to that because I think that's a really good point, Jack. I would argue that the pain that you experienced, not only was it not trivial because it was difficult for you, it wasn't trivial because, although on the outside it might have looked like a little thing, the question I always have to ask is, what did it mean to you? And what did it unearth, or what did it find in you that was there to be found that was very difficult? So, for example, someone could come and, I'm thinking of two people being in a situation where they're both overlooked, where neither of them are really considered by the third party. The third party is disinterested. Well, one person might respond to that in a, oh, well, that's not really any big deal. Their subjective experience of being overlooked is not that difficult. But the other person may experience it as profoundly difficult, as leveling them. Why is that true? Because their life experience has formed itself in such a way that they have become sensitized to being ignored or to being overlooked. Say, for example, a person who very much, say a girl who very much wanted her daddy's attention, but he had five sons and he played ball with them. He went four-wheeling with them. He took them on trips, and the little girl never got acknowledged, never got understood, never got any kind of attention, and watched her whole life, her brothers growing up, and they got it all and she got nothing. So if a man that's important in her life comes along and says, and overlooks her, that punches a button in her, that is hugely difficult. It isn't just about this man who overlooked her, but it's about a whole experience over years and years of feeling like I'm not valued, experiencing maybe a huge sense of not being protected, not being liked, thinking they were something was especially wrong with being a girl. It triggered in her, it found in her something that was very painful. Well, perhaps the other person who responded well to that had a situation where there was a great deal of security and a sense of protection and a lot of attention and felt like they were valued throughout their life. Well, when I'm overlooked this time, it really isn't igniting anything in me because it doesn't find anything. But take the same two people. One of them, who is so hurt by being overlooked, responds to their diagnosis of multiple sclerosis with kind of an acceptance, an ability to say, okay, I'm gonna get in here and fight with this one. The second person who was fine with being overlooked is absolutely leveled this time. Well, why? The question we have to ask is, what is their experience that brought them to the place where it's very difficult or it's not at all? Perhaps the second person has had a best friend die of multiple sclerosis or saw them suffer over a long period of time and they were devastated by it. Or, you know, something like that, where their particular history, and we all have difficulties in our history, got triggered by this particular situation. Well, the person that wasn't bothered by multiple sclerosis could say, come on, have courage. You know, of course multiple sclerosis is difficult, but you know, you've just really got to gut it up and have faith and know that God's going to take care of you. And it's ridiculous. This is silly for you to get so upset. Well, that's really not understanding the subjectivity, as you were saying, of pain. Pain is subject to our history, our experience, and digs deep down into the core of our being. What might be trivial for you is not at all trivial for me. But I would argue that what you respond to in a very big way, the outward circumstance may look trivial, but I would say it never is. And I would encourage you to never minimize what looks trivial, but rather to understand why it has such a big impact on you.
Just reading between the lines, I think the sort of thing that this letter writer has in mind is, you know, let's take me where I flunked a midterm and just about, you know, died, and somebody in Somalia or Sudan, let's say a mother in Sudan who has her child captured and taken into slavery. Okay, there is a perspective that you could take that is actually kind of a characteristically Marxist perspective, frankly, where you could look at the mother, the injustice, the social problem, the political problem, the class struggle and the class warfare that's going on in the Sudan, where one person is being taken into slavery, as a much more grievous kind of suffering than my flunking a midterm. But what I was saying and what you were saying as well is that, on the other hand, what may look like just my trifling bourgeois sensibilities being stepped on, in fact, are deeply, deeply personal. And the fact of the matter is, it's entirely possible that my flunking a midterm could be far more devastating to me than a mother losing a child in a certain situation on a certain occasion in a certain culture. And it's just, that's just the reality.
And before anybody jumps too far to criticize you here, I want to say that you have flunked a midterm and you have also lost a child.
Yes.
So you know what you're talking about.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I obviously don't want to trivialize anybody's suffering, but the point is that there are some cultures where death is so common that parents learn to just accept the fact that their children may not live beyond a certain age, and they inure themselves to it. They become accustomed to it. They come to expect it, and they don't invest themselves in the children in the same way. What causes the pain is the personal investment, at whatever level, for whatever reason. And it's when I have been destroyed, when I have been reduced to nothing by some event, that's where we feel the real pain and the real suffering. And that can be very, very different for different people. And for me to simply pass somebody else's pain off as bourgeois or as trivial or as, like you put it, to take the perspective, why don't you just get over it? You know, why don't you just not, why don't you just put it in perspective? Yeah, that would be nice. But the reality is that's not my subjective experience. I am putting it in perspective.
It's in perspective of my reality.
Right, right.
And that's the only perspective we can have is the reality that we have grown up with and live in. And not your perspective. Sometimes when people say, just put it into perspective, they mean, put it in my perspective.
Yeah.
And that's so unrealistic. It's so unkind. It's so unthinking. It's so hurtful for us to demand that other people experience pain or a lack of pain in the way that we do, because we don't have their experience.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to be critical of somebody else's response to a given situation is evidence of our lack of maturity.
Our self-centeredness, ultimately, a kind of self-centeredness that sees my subjective experiences as the only sort of subjective experience that anyone should have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess it's immaturity and a lack of education. I think a lot of people don't know that our experience of pain is very subjective and comes out of our experience. And so if I don't know that, then I can say, hey, why are you complaining about multiple sclerosis, you know, if they only see their own perspective? But I guess that is ultimately self-centeredness, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah. I think so.
So I guess, Jack, when he says, Christine and Jack, if God has made you happy dwellers of the Pacific Northwest, then what is God doing to all the unhappy people who are living somewhere else? Am I the only unhappy person there is? And what about all the other people that I know and read about in the paper? And I just really object to that very strongly. I guess I've already said it, but it almost kind of sounds like God's made you kind of this happy-go-lucky, unexamined, silly dweller of the Northwest where nothing ever has gone wrong in your life. And what about all the other unhappy people? And I would say, I think I'm included as a person who has both been granted a lot of really neat things. And also I have been a person who has lost a lot that is very precious to me. And I don't characterize myself as essentially unhappy, but I do characterize myself as someone who's been essentially sobered by the reality of life. And I don't stand outside your rank.
The last sentence you read is, God is not here or even close to here, which comes back to the first point you were making, that actually what you have learned over the course of your life is that's precisely where God is here. It's in our unhappiness. It's in our pain. It's in our sorrow. It's in our suffering that we really come to terms with, what are we going to do with God? Are we or are we not going to relate to him? Are we or are we not going to love him? Are we or are we not going to trust him? That's the suffering that really makes those pointed issues in our lives.
Exactly, exactly. And is he a loving God, which is what I have to keep coming back to, probably more than anything else. So if you're saying, he's saying God is not here or even close to here is a statement that he's making, and his presupposition is, I think that I believe, he's saying, I believe that God's not here because they're suffering. I believe not God's not here because there was a Holocaust and continues to be in people's lives. His presupposition is very different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite.
Yeah. He goes on to say, this is just common sense. And it is a kind of common sense. There are a lot of people who would share his perspective. And I can understand why people look at life that way. I can understand why they would think that God is not there in the midst of suffering. I do understand that. But like you, I share the perspective that the truth is exactly the opposite. That the truth is that God is very active in pain and sorrow and suffering, trying to woo us to that truth, to see him, to know him, to confront him, and to do business with him.
You know, as we're talking, Jack, I see myself full of emotion, wanting to reach through the microphone and look at this man's eyes, look at him in the face and talk to him directly and share with him my passion. And I ask myself, okay, so why? Why is that so big? And it's because I think I feel misunderstood by this. I don't like feeling misunderstood. That's a weakness of mine. And it's also because what I understand about who God is has been so difficult to obtain. It cost me so much in the past and cost me so much now that it feels like it's trivialized when it is such a big, difficult piece of my life to have gained the insight that God is here and He is close to me, and it is a lot to the suffering that I experience. And you know, I have to say, I wish it wasn't so. I wish that God had not set up life to be this way. I really wish that. But I've come to, I think, embrace that that's reality. And that to object to that reality, to throw it away, to act as though it's not true, is missing out on life. Period. So shall we read on?
Yeah, let's go.
On one show, Jack recalled the minister in Chariots of Fire who got apparently favored to win a certain Olympic event. Does God intervene in sporting events and wars? Going back to the Soviet victory in Hungary in the film Sunshine, and over Germany in general in East-West, I may like and accept the consequences of World War II. If God guided that particular victory, then why didn't God ensure that the consequences were more tolerable? Or, to return to another Jewish Holocaust movie, Oscar's List, by Steven Spielberg, if God cared or even regretted the Holocaust enough to create the State of Israel, then why did God choose to inflict this suffering on the Palestinians?
Okay, well, let me take the easy one first. Does God intervene in sporting events? Sure, why not? But not in the sense in which I think not in the spirit in which he's asking the question. I mean, is it that God cares who wins just a silly little game? Well, of course God doesn't care who wins a silly little game. But he does care about all the people who are participating in that and their relationship to him and their well-being and their value system and their priorities and so on. So it would be very like God to have me fail miserably in a sporting event in order to teach me that life is more than sports. Or it would also be very like God at a certain point in time to make me succeed famously in a sporting event precisely because I at that point in time need a tangible touch of his love. The whole gamut is possible with God because in fact in a sporting event it is so not objectively important that God can do all kinds of things with it. And it can be a very, very important tool in God's arsenal for shaping us and molding us and making contact with us and teaching us.
And in fact,
ways.
Isn't that very personal to you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, sports has been my hell for the last probably 5 years, 5 or 6 years.
Your joy and your hell.
My joy and my hell, exactly. I have not experienced more bitterness and anger and resentment and confronted more issues more deeply in my recent life than over sports, as my children have been involved in them. Taught me very important lessons about myself. I have refused to learn very important lessons about myself during this whole process. I mean, the whole gamut of real life has been, you know, kind of materialized in this silly little thing called a game.
So your answer would be, certainly God has intervened in sporting events and is shaping the character of Jack Crabtree through them. He could do that through a sporting event. He could do that through your wife. He could do that through a camping trip you go on. He could do it through being in the midst of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict today.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing that this writer has to understand about our perspective that he may not appreciate is that I spoke of my personal experience, how God has reached through this sporting event to me. I think to the writer of this letter, it sounds like, oh, I see, God cares about you, and he's just using everybody else in the sporting event as a prop to minister to you. I mean, that would obviously be extremely self-centered, extremely egocentric if that was my view of things. But that's not my view of things. My view of things is not that God is using the sporting event in my life, but rather that God is using the sporting event and custom-making the event to be exactly what each and every participant in that needs at that particular time.
And one of them needs to win, and that's how he's training them. and somebody else needs to lose, and that's how he's training them.
Exactly.
It isn't that he just loved the winners and oh, well, I guess we're going to trash the losers. Same with his Israelis and the Palestinians. They're both being taught we can't stomach the losing. We can't stomach where it's most painful. That goes back to a presupposition. Is God loving us in the midst of suffering or only in the midst of help?
Exactly. Exactly right.
So to the answer to the question, if God guided that particular victory, he's talking about World War II, then why didn't God ensure that the consequences were more tolerable?
Less painful.
Yeah. Why didn't he make it feel good to everybody? And that's very much we're answering that question is, he's not into making things tolerable. I was talking to a woman today in my counseling office, and I was kind of telling her what I do. And I said, if you're looking for someone that will help you hold the waters back of the pain that you need to enter into, or that the sight that you need to have, if you need someone to help build the protective wall against that and ensure that it never breaks through, I am the wrong person to talk to, because I don't believe that that's most helpful to you. I think that looking straight into the heart of your life, which will break the dam open, is the thing that's going to help you most of all. I believe it to the extent that I actively enter myself into working with people in a way that is going to bring all sorts of pain to myself that doesn't feel tolerable, but does train me and does teach me. And what I said to them, you've got to decide what you want. Do you want a life that's protected? Do you want to hide the rest of your life? Do you want to be a dam builder? Or do you want to be a man who's being taught by God, who's becoming wise? If you want the latter, come work with me. If you don't, you can find any number of counselors and they'll help you do the other. That's not what I'm in the business of doing. Jack, I keep on thinking people are going to say, okay, I'm out of here. And you know what she did? She broke down in tears and she said, I know you're right, and I've waited a lifetime for someone to tell me this. Amazing!
Wow.
Is that the work of God or what?
Yeah, that is truly amazing.
Am I in an honored position or what? Can you believe it?
That's great.
But that is a spirit of God, I think, helping us have that perspective on pain. That perspective on suffering, that perspective on war, that perspective on losing, that perspective on loss, that perspective on not getting our desires satiated.
Yes, it is God.
That perspective on deprivation
right.
is the word that I was looking for.
Yeah, because as he says in this letter, the other perspective is so commonsensical, as he puts it, that the idea that God would show his love, would show his goodness, would show his compassion and kindness by making life more tolerable, by making it, if not abundant, at least passable, you know, at least tolerable to me.
And what makes life tolerable, though, is this new, different perspective, this perspective where life comes out of what's good and out of what's difficult. And it's the mercy of God that's changing us into people that love him, changing us into different people. That's why it's tolerable, because of the goal that I have in my life. Not because I like suffering, not because I want it. Because I don't want it in and of itself. I'd like to X it all out and never have it again. But what I do want is I do want to follow God. I do want to know God. I do want to be a person who understands compassion. I want to be a forgiving person. It's important to me. That's who God wants to make us. And so that's bigger than the suffering I have to go through. And I think that has to be our perspective. And without that perspective, it is intolerable. It is a waste to have gone through a Holocaust. And I think for a lot of people, we go through Holocausts and it is a waste. We don't learn anything from it. We just fight it. Because what we want, what we're grabbing onto, is our rebellious, I would say, desire to only have freedom from pain. We have become, as you would say, I think in the past, drug addicts of happiness.
Yeah.
I've got to have it, and I'll do anything to get that.
To distract myself from the pain.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Rather than wise, kind, giving, loving God seekers.
You know, I think we've basically answered his question, what our perspective is on does God intervene in sporting events, war, et cetera, et cetera. I will say, when it comes down to the specifics of why God brings this country against this country, and this country wins, and this country suffers, and so on, I can't pretend to know that. I mean, that, but I just trust the God who's the author of history, that I've seen what he's done in my own life. I've seen what he's done in other people's lives that I know. And I extrapolate from that to an assumption that God is concerned with each and every human being in the world, and all of history is being orchestrated, and the events of the lives of each individual that they participate in or are a part of is tailor-made by God to be the touch of his loving hand, not necessarily of his nice hand, not necessarily his soothing hand, but his loving hand, that the painful touch of God's love sometimes, but it's God's love nonetheless. At the national level, history is very intricate, and God's purposes are very intricate, and I don't presume to understand those. So I don't know if I can give an adequate answer to his question about why did World War II go the way that it went, and this war, and this thing over here. I don't know. I don't have a big enough perspective to know that kind of thing.
Well, I guess the perspective I have, and maybe it's not thought through enough, Jack, but I don't really think very much on a national or international level. It seems to me life happens in the context of my individual heart. And whether it's played out in a soccer game or whether it's played out on the beaches of Normandy, it isn't the whole war that becomes important to me. Or maybe even to God. It's what's happening to that man on the beach of Normandy in that moment. That's where it's at.
Yeah. No, I agree that that's what's of central importance. That's true. I think from the standpoint of the purposes of God, what's happening at the other level is also important as well. But it's just so much harder to read and understand. And maybe one day we will. But from where I sit right here, I don't understand it at that level.
It's important in the sense that he is weaving a history that's coming toward a particular end.
Right, yeah. That is ultimately going to bring glory to him, to God. That's no longer about me. You know, that's about God, who's the author of history.
Right, but I think ultimately it's all about God, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Is he is bringing people to glorify him, and he is bringing history to glorify
exactly.
him. And
exactly.
he's bringing the individuals to bring about the big picture.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Jack, I'm thinking of Christians who may be listening to this program who say, well, wait a minute. God isn't necessarily... There is a scripture in the Bible that said, God has created some for the purposes of destruction or for wrath. I know I'm not quoting that right.
Vessels of wrath prepared or prepared for destruction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got some of the words right.
Mm-hmm.
And some not. So the question would be, this little baby born of this mother in Sacred Heart Hospital today, through no fault of his own, he's destined for destruction, he's destined for wrath. Wait a minute. How can that possibly be a loving God?
Well, yeah, that's a big question. It requires a shift of perspective, again, and the question is, what's true? What's more commonsensical, to use the phrase that this letter writer used again, what's more commonsensical is the perspective that is me-centered, or if not me-centered, us human being-centered, that sees the measure of God's goodness as how he deals with us, what he gives us, what he provides for us, how he treats us. If we look at it that perspective, if we look at it in this anthropocentric manner, then it kind of makes sense to us that, yeah, how can we justify calling him good and compassionate and kind if God would create human creatures that have a role in the story that God is telling where they become subject to his condemnation and his wrath? That doesn't make any sense. From that perspective, that's true. It doesn't make any sense. But what the Bible is saying, you know, we either buy this or we don't. We either see this or we don't. We either agree with it or we don't. The Bible is suggesting that reality is God-centric, theocentric, not anthropocentric. It's not man-centered. Creation is man-centered. What God created has put man at kind of the apex of his creation. But reality is God-centered. This is ultimately about God telling the story that he wants to tell in concrete form through the reality of this world we actually live in and are incarnating. From that perspective, as the author of reality, as the creator, as the one designing the whole thing, as the one telling the story, as the one, you know, inventing all this, can God make one human being to tell the part of the story where God displays his mercy by giving them this incredibly undeserved gift just out of the bountiful mercy of his heart, whereas another human being he creates for the purpose of demonstrating the power of his wrath and his justice? Is that within the prerogatives of the author of this entire thing? Well, the answer is yes. If God is who the Bible says that he is, with the prerogatives that the Bible says that he has, yes, absolutely, it's within his prerogatives. And it's not inconsistent with him being fundamentally a God who is merciful, loving, kind, compassionate. He's demonstrating that love and that mercy and that compassion on what he calls vessels of mercy prepared for glory. But correspondingly along with that, he's demonstrating another aspect of who he is. He's a pure and holy God who is just, and he's demonstrating his justice through the punishment, the condemnation that we all deserve, but that some are going to experience it, evidently. Now, it takes changing our whole perception of reality to see that. It takes allowing God to be in that position of prerogative as author of all reality that he has, and to reason it through from that perspective. Otherwise, as long as we take an anthropocentric perspective, it's going to look like, how can God be good and do me bad?
Or how can God be good and do anybody that bad?
And what you said?
Do anybody that bad. I mean, it's a very, very difficult thing for me to understand. I really can't. I don't know if any of us really can. I mean, I understand your argument, and I actually believe it. And I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, where I end up landing is there is so much evidence of truth in the world, and truth that I see playing itself out over and over again, and truth that I put up against the Bible, and I see it proving itself. And just because I don't get this piece doesn't throw away everything. On the other hand, I keep my eyes open. I keep thinking about it. I keep wondering. I have to say I don't like it. And yet for me ultimately to say that it's not okay for God to do that is putting myself in the place of being God and pretending like I really know so much more than I know.
Right. Yeah, well, like so many things in life, sometimes they're just questions that we don't have the answers to, but we can legitimately and rationally trust that there are answers in view of everything else we know. And I think that's what you're saying. In view of everything else that you have learned about God, he doesn't seem like a callous jerk. Therefore, that's not the right explanation for why he would send some people to eternal condemnation. So what is the answer? Well, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand how that's consistent with the character of this God that I've come to know, but it must be consistent somehow. I'll have to wait and see. And we may wait a long time. We may wait forever, still gathering information. But that's not an illegitimate, irrational thing to do, to say this much I know. God is good, God is kind, God is compassionate, God is merciful, and God is loving. That's a given for me. How do I reconcile that with this other reality? I'm not sure I altogether understand.
And in our last program, we talked about why something would be a given to me. Not because I've had this irrational, fantasy-like, wishful thinking faith, but it's that God has become somebody that I believe is good because it's based on a real tried understanding of who he is. I've looked at him, I've evaluated him, I've looked at the Bible, I've looked at life, I've experienced a ton, I've asked a lot of questions. It is a very rational and emotional and objective and non-objective and everything, all putting my life together and coming out with, okay, so where do I land? Mm-hmm. And even up against the difficulty of life, I keep landing on God is a good God. And ultimately, I think, as you said in a couple of programs ago, I can't really explain that. I can't tell you everything that's gone on in my life. But that's where I've landed. And it seems to me that that's where I'm planted. Mm-hmm. That there's a firm foundation under my feet that really does believe that. Mm-hmm. You know, another thing that I think of, Jack, that helps me with this is, you know, I really kind of like to think of myself as kind of big, as kind of knowing a lot, and I don't really think that anymore. I think one of the things that helps me not see myself as very big is sometimes when I kind of look at the numbers of people in the world, and I'm just one of those gazillion people around, and sometimes even when I'm in a big stadium and there's a lot of people, all of a sudden I don't look so big to myself anymore, and I think, wow, all these people have lives. You know, all of them are like me in that sense.
Even, some of them don't even intersect with mine at all.
Or yeah, they don't even know my name.
Exactly.
You know, and then I look at the intricacies of people's lives in my work, and I think, oh my heavens, they not only have lives, they have very intricate lives that God is working on, and oh my heavens, God must be really, 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 really big.
Exactly.
To be managing and organizing and loving and being a part of all these lives in this stadium, much less everybody all over. And that kind of has helped me see the bigness of God.
Yeah.
And God's a whole lot bigger even than that, of course.
Right.
But it's kind of my way of saying, hey, Christine, you really don't have that much in control as you think you do. God is really, really, really big, and he's unimaginably so. So when you try to understand him and you don't quite get your mind around it, that's okay. But remember, he's big, and he can do what I cannot do.
Right. And his perspective, because he's so much bigger than I am, his perspective is so much bigger than I am as well. So if I don't understand what he's doing, maybe I don't have all the information. Maybe I don't have all the pieces. Maybe I don't have a broad enough perspective. Yeah, I had exactly that experience flying into an urban airport one time, and I saw these endless houses, houses after houses after houses, and it just, the light went on and said, Jack, you don't know any of those people, and they don't know you. And I had exactly that same thought. Wow, incredible. And yet God is directly and intimately and involved in each and every one of their lives. Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah.
At the end of this century, the big questions about reality and being human rise with unexpected power. We ask ever more agonizingly, what does it mean to be human? How do human beings fit into this vast cosmos? Where to from here? In his News and Views article, Postmodernism, A New Model of Reality, Mackenzie Study Center member Wes Hurd shows how our present-day culture answers these questions in radically non-biblical ways. He shows how the prevalent postmodern view of life is fed to us through television, popular music, and education. However, he also states that although postmodernism has many negative aspects, it may present opportunities for biblical Christians to dialogue more openly with people who need real answers to some big questions. Call Mackenzie at 541-485-4801 for your free News and Views article, Postmodernism, A New Model of Reality.
it has been really exciting, a really good thing for Jack and I to get together and dialogue about so many different issues with the backdrop of the Bible, trying to understand the Bible better, trying to understand how it fits into our lives in a real practical way. In addition to the radio, we've been trying to think about what are some other ways that we can dialogue with our listening audience and with other people to perhaps even expand the audience that wants to listen to what's being taught here at Christianity at Work. So we came up with the idea of offering seminars or workshops to people out there in your community. We would like to offer this for a weekend retreat, for a women's group, for your support group, for a men's group, a women's group, a home group, for your church, for schools, for colleges, just about any group that wants to get together and put together a workshop. We'd be really excited to help you out. The format that we're thinking about is an interactive one. Just as you hear on Christianity at Work, Jack and I are interacting with each other. The topic could be one of your choice. It is really wide open for us. What you want to have us present, we'd be very happy to do that. We also appreciate the dialogue between ourselves and our listening audience. We've had a couple of times where we've gone out to different communities, and that has just been a wonderful thing to get to know you, to see you, to interact with you personally, face to face. So your questions would be a big part of what we would do in any seminar. Depending on the response, we may not be able to meet everybody's needs, but we're going to try and do the best that we can. If you're interested in this, we invite you to contact McKinsey Study Center. It's at 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. And the telephone number is 541-485-4801. And those addresses will be, and phone number will be repeated at the end of the program. We hope to hear from you.
You have been listening to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of McKinsey Study Center. If you would like a free copy of this program, or would like to know more about McKinsey Study Center or Gutenberg College, you may call us at area code 541-485-4801. You can write to us at 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. And we're also on the Internet. Look for us under McKinsey Study Center or Gutenberg College. If you didn't have time to write all that down, I'll repeat it again in just a moment. The McKinsey staff has worked for years studying the Bible, understanding the world we live in, and pursuing what it means to be a Christian. They desire that their ministry may be valuable to others, but they also know that their efforts are in deep need of God's mercy. You can join the McKinsey staff through classes, seminars, tapes, and papers. The McKinsey Study Center is a nonprofit ministry entirely funded by the generous contributions of people who believe in its goals and have benefited from its ministry. If you would like to make a gift to McKinsey, it will be entirely tax deductible. Just mail your check to McKinsey Study Center, 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. If you would like to call and request a free taped copy of today's program, the telephone number is 541-485-4801. Now on behalf of Dr. Jack Crabtree, Christine Barber, and the other staff of McKinsey Study Center, thank you for listening.